Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Today we'll be hearing from not-for-profit success consultants Julia Black and Jessica Merritt. We all know how important it is to cover some of those big challenges. They'll be talking to us about topics such as board governance, volunteers, climate change, cybersecurity and AI, and of course the big one, financial sustainability. They help small to medium-sized not-for-profits with their consulting advice. Welcome to the podcast, Julie and Jessica. I'm really pleased to have you on the Community Conversations podcast because we want to bring to our community centre members all these aspects about not-for-profits strategy and how that back end and that governance and just what they can do to get some resources and help, because they're really stretched, commonly only 1 to 1.5 paid resource. The rest is volunteers. So all of this other stuff that they need to be thinking about is really difficult. That's why we wanted to speak to consultants like yourself, so you can share some of that wisdom and knowledge that I know you've gathered for so many years. Julie, perhaps we can start with you. Now, board governance, very important topic. What information would you like to share with community centres?
Well, I think, you know, with board governance, it's really easy to recruit friends and that. But when you're looking at your board, it's really important to look at the quality of the people that you've got on your board. But once you've got the right people, make sure they're not just left hanging. Board training is really important. Doing a really good induction to your organisation is very important. Having a good chair, it's worthwhile investing in having the chair do some professional development. So if you are doing the agenda as the CEO or the manager, work with your chair about making sure you've got what you want on that agenda. It's also important that all your board members know all about, you know, some of the standards that need to be effective, that they understand if they're on the board, they're not management. And I know one time when I went for an interview as a CEO, I said to the chair, if you want to interfere with what I'm doing as a manager, don't employ me, because the board is there to guide the management, not to run the organisation.
So, Julie, talk to us about the board meeting.
Board meetings are really critical to get them right. I would always recommend that the manager or the executive director meet with the chair, often a breakfast meeting, a quick breakfast meeting, have your agenda ready. The other thing is important to provide the board with information. It's really essential that the board chair and the management person meet before a board meeting, that you're really prepared to see what you want the outcomes. And it's really important to provide the board with papers, with recommendations, not leave them sort of hanging, making sure the board can make an informed decision on something rather than guessing or it leading to a big discussion. A simple thing I've found over the years is putting times by your agenda. So if you say the board meeting's going to go for an hour and a half, make sure it's not going for 2 hours. The other thing that's useful with governance is bringing in a speaker to talk on something, and it might be on the Australian Community Services standards. It may be how to run an effective meeting. But what you want to do is build your board's capacity, and that cannot be underestimated. And on the other side of the coin with governance, make sure that you're ahead of the field, that, you know, when do you need to have your audits? When do you need to provide papers? If you're government funded, it's really important that you can actually make sure that the board is aware of any reports that you're putting in. So I guess one of the key things with board governance is to make sure you can articulate what you need from that board, make sure you're across what the board's expectation. The other thing that a lot of places do and find very valuable is annually doing a board assessment, a self-assessment. And you can do those quite reasonable with some online ones they have. And I guess the other thing is making sure you've got everything that the board needs to make it a good decision, and you've got the right people on the board. And unfortunately, some organisations will have someone on the board for 20 years. You need to look at, do you turn your board over every 3 to 4 years and have a time frame? Because from my experience of 30 years in the not-for-profit sector, is it brings in new blood and it brings in new ideas. So Don't underestimate how important governance is. Make sure your chair is given the right tools to successfully run a meeting and also work with the board yourself.
Great points, Julie, and that effectiveness is so important because for a lot of people they join before all the passion, but unfortunately they don't have the knowledge to go with it.
That's right, and you know, it's sometimes getting a treasurer or someone with a law background can be very difficult. Don't go for a second or a third choice. Wait to get the right people on the board.
Julie, we're also going to make comment about strategic planning because that can be a big exercise. What's your tips on that?
Yeah, strategic planning is really the ace of your business. It's things like planning of what you're going to do, what you're going to achieve. And this is where Jessica will talk about how important finance is. And you can have all these wonderful ideas and do a great strategic plan, but if you can't afford to do it, it's not going to work. But I guess my advice to everyone is engage the volunteers, engage the staff and engage the board. Have a good facilitator, and that's where at Not For Profit Success, we go out there and we work with the board, we work with the staff and the volunteers to come up with a strategic plan. And it's got to be achievable. And I guess the other thing is when you're doing a strategic plan, make sure you've done a policy review, that's up to date. One of the things that a lot of places don't have, and I think you need it before you do a strategic plan, is a business continuity plan. And I think a lot of people were caught out when COVID hit because a lot of organisations...
I don't think a lot saw that tsunami coming, Julie.
No. So, you know, a business continuity plan is essential. So you've got to have your backyard in order before you do a strategic plan. Just don't do a strategic plan and put it on a shelf. The main thing with a strategic plan is don't let it grow dust. Report under your strategic plan pillars at every board meeting. So once again, sometimes you've got to spend a little money to get a lot of good information and good skills back.
And Julie, volunteers have been the lifeblood of community centres. There is a small paid resource, but it has been declining. What have you seen across the not-for-profit sector in that regard?
Since COVID, volunteerism has decreased by 30%, which is huge. Volunteers are great, but once again, you have to have the right volunteers. Some volunteers are now heading into their 70s and 80s. And remember, unless you check your insurance, because a lot of insurance companies won't cover volunteers over 80. And they can be, you know, the ones that come in every week and people love them and sort of thing. But, you know, it gets back then to recruitment of volunteers. It's okay to say no if someone's not right. It's important that there is a police check done on volunteers. You know, do they need a senior first aid certificate? So there's lots and lots of things. Rather than just say, oh, I need a volunteer, the days of volunteers coming in and stuffing envelopes is gone. If you want good quality volunteers, it might take a little while, but have a really, really good job description for them so they know exactly what they're doing. Follow that through with a good orientation. Check up how they're going after their first time with you. So, you know, it's getting harder to get them, but once you've got them, you've got to retain them. And, you know, there's some very good courses on how to retain your volunteers around the place. I think volunteers and staff and board need to sign a code of conduct every year because that is your Bible. If something goes wrong and you're looking at how can I deal with this person, if they've breached the code of conduct, that's often a good way to say this just isn't working. You know, I guess balance your volunteers, value them, but also make them feel valued too because you'll lose your volunteers. The other thing a lot of people don't realise, you can get volunteers that work for the Dole. Often they will then become really good volunteers for you or they'll go on and get something, a paid job for them. So, you know, don't just sit back and think things are going to come to you. You're going to have to work it. And, you know, one of the best volunteer recruiters I've had has been a volunteer themselves.
Very true. Julie, thank you for covering this. Julie Black, consultant with Not-for-Profit Success. We're now going to speak to Jessica Merrick, who's also a consultant with Not-for-Profit Success. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you.
So, Jessica, you're going to talk to us, as Julie alluded to, about financial sustainability, certainly an important topic.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen, as Julie mentioned, since COVID, huge financial variability. It's been a big issue in the last 5 years, with the pandemic bringing in a new era of economic uncertainty and reducing service delivery for many not-for-profits. And since then, we've continued to be pressured by uncertain government funding, increased competition for donations, and donors' demand for evidence of impact. So last year, almost half of not-for-profits made a profit, a quarter made a loss, and a quarter broke even. So smaller not-for-profits are feeling cash flow pressures even more acutely, with many having to use their financial reserves to fund even day-to-day operations. Of course, we know any financial strain can impact an organization's ability to address any other challenges, too. We also see director remuneration on the rise, with 1 in 4 not-for-profit directors receiving remuneration, which is actually twice as many as a year ago. And an additional 1 in 4 not-for-profits are considering whether they need to implement some remuneration. Unsurprisingly, this varies by size, and this will hit the smaller not-for-profits even more, who are less able to pay their non-executive directors. So smaller not-for-profits have this challenge of attracting great talent without the remuneration, and that also means they might miss out on diverse talent, especially from underrepresented or marginalized groups. For example, people who don't have the luxury of volunteering at the moment, or people with lived experience who we know should definitely be paid for their time and expertise. But we've thought about some opportunities here in this space, and we've considered, in thinking about solutions for financial pressures, you could be considering how well you're currently measuring and articulating your impact. And so, if it's possible, investing in the tools and systems which help you to track and report those outcomes for your funders and donors to get the most bang for your buck there, and enhancing governance capabilities, financial management, and cost controls. And also to address financial sustainability, not-for-profits can be considering if they might be able to benefit from partnerships and collaborations with other organizations who share their mission. So operationally, this could look like collaborating on projects to share cost and expertise and sharing resources. So outsourcing functions like payroll or sharing or even purchasing do-it-yourself templates like the ones Not-for-Profit Success offers. And if it's right for your organization, some not-for-profits have even undertaken mergers. And we see a slight increase here in the sector with about 5% currently undertaking a merger. And a third of the folks who we're working with actually have considered a merger in the past year. So a lot of people are considering whether this is right for them. And for those who did merge, we've heard from them that overwhelmingly they actually found the benefits to outweigh the drawbacks. So they were finding benefits like an increase in revenue, reduction in their operational costs, improved funding relationships, and even having better success with their grants, and maintaining compliance so people can get back to focusing on the core mission.
Great information on that financial sustainability. Now, something that's coming up for a lot of boards, and certainly should be, Jessica, is cybersecurity and AI.
Absolutely. So we see not-for-profits needing now to navigate the complexities of cybersecurity and this evolving landscape of AI. Cyber threats are actually getting increasingly sophisticated and elaborate. In one scam in December, a deep fake of a Hong Kong firm CFO and 15 other execs instructed an employee in a video conference to transfer over $40 million Australian dollars into the criminal's account. And messages across various platforms went on for a week, and this employee made over a dozen transfers. It was that believable. So here in Australia, we can see companies like Westpac analyzing 30 million events a day for potential fraud, anything from a login to a regular transaction, change of address, to an attempted hack. And they have an algorithm which picks up what they consider unusual behavior. So AI's ability to learn from data is its superpower, which makes it a game changer for making sense of volume at pace. Now, banks don't have the luxury of time, so they're using algorithms that can run in real time and make judgments. And on the customer side, we see Commonwealth Bank achieving a 50% drop in customer scam losses. They've used AI to send out suspicious transaction alerts and use app messaging. Now, you might be wondering, what does this have to do with the not-for-profit? Because they have very little in common with the big banks. However, cybersecurity is a growing concern for us, too. And we're seeing an increase in risk and vulnerability and in understanding and managing data security. So while not-for-profits are considering the efficacy of detection and security capabilities, only 1 in 3 say that they right now have an effective process in place to manage cybersecurity. So we see 3 key challenges in this space. First, high incidence rate. Even within not-for-profits, we see 1 in 5 having experienced a cyber incident last year. And in sectors like social services, aged care, and education, it's even higher at 1 in 4. There's also a lack of technical expertise, so boards and staff often lack the necessary IT and cybersecurity knowledge, making it difficult to assess and mitigate risk effectively. We're seeing an increased demand for cybersecurity awareness training among staff and volunteers, which is positive. But it won't surprise you at all that there's an underinvestment in cybersecurity. So many not-for-profits struggling to allocate funding for these kinds of measures and prevention. And of course, this barrier is exacerbated for smaller not-for-profits. So where large not-for-profits with IT teams are better equipped to handle cybersecurity threats and develop frameworks and test incident response plans, small not-for-profits are less likely to have a dedicated resource. So what can be done? Well, if possible, seek professional support to help with training and security planning. You also want to utilize strong passwords, multi-factor authentication, update software and systems, back up your data, and consider shared services and collaborations. Now, this is actually a place we can take note of what our colleagues in the big banks are doing. It might surprise you to learn that big banks are collaborating with one another in combating cyber risk. So staff talk about picking up the phone to call up a counterpart at a bank around the world, ask them what they're seeing, what they're up against, so they can help each other. So AI has a lot of potential and the field is moving fast. They know they can't stay on top of it in isolation, so they're actually knowledge sharing. We'd recommend that too. In terms of AI, we're seeing that not-for-profits are interested in exploring its potential opportunities, but they're sort of uncertain about how to navigate its complexity. So not-for-profits' use of AI is largely untapped, ad hoc, experimental, and adoption is really in its early stages. It's at around 10%. So some examples of how not-for-profits are using AI to improve their services. In the aged care sector, predictive AI sensors are being used to monitor sleep to prevent falls. Black Dog Institute delivered a mental health intervention to 7,000 students using an adventure game that they played on their mobile phones. And they used AI to gather predictive data and profile behaviors, which helped them identify and even predict mental illness within young people. There's also some not-for-profits using AI to improve their own sustainability. Greenpeace Australia, for example, uses AI for donor management, and they say that's resulted in 5 times the return on investment and retention of supporters they thought who were likely to lapse. Other not-for-profits are using AI for fundraising, grant writing, customer engagement, social media management, data analysis, meeting transcription, and note-taking. So this is an exciting time to get creative about how we work.
So speaking about getting creative, climate change is affecting all of us.
Yes.
What do you have to offer on that, Jessica?
Yes, climate change. While 3 out of 4 not-for-profit boards have ESG on their agenda, many still need to take the steps to address climate change. Embedding it in your risk management framework and considering climate sustainability metrics are essential steps forward. And this includes assessing your organization's carbon footprint, understanding climate risks, and developing mitigation measures. So there's a few key challenges here. Again, limited resources. Like the changing digital landscape, this space is evolving rapidly, and not-for-profits face similar constraints of those limited resources and a lack of expertise, which can lead to some inadequate planning and response. There's a need for climate governance. About 65% of not-for-profits express the need for a greater focus on climate governance, but half of boards are reporting not having taken the steps yet. So effective climate governance looks like setting clear goals for reducing emissions, engaging stakeholders, and regularly reviewing your progress. There's also the impact on operations. So climate change poses a direct challenge to not-for-profit operations. It might increase your demand for services in case of weather events and disruptions to day-to-day activities. We're working with a client right now who's reviewing their planning in response to extreme heat in aged care facilities. That's a significant risk. So we need to be proactive in building resilience and adapting to changing conditions. But there are some opportunities here. So not-for-profits can explore grant and funding opportunities that support their ESG efforts. Local councils often provide grants for things like recycling, energy efficiency, and sustainable practice. And programs like Community-Led Climate Solutions provide grants specifically to help not-for-profits implement practices that reduce emissions and promote sustainability. You can also think about implementing sustainable practice, adopting simple, cost-effective practices like recycling, energy efficiency, reducing waste. And of course, as we talked about before, you can consider if there's an opportunity to leverage technology, including AI, to optimize operations, track your progress in your sustainability effort. And similarly, with the digital landscape, collaboration, resource sharing, and engaging in affordable professional support are also good strategies to leverage resources and address what climate change means for your organization.
Excellent tips and really practical examples too, Jessica. So thank you for that. Julie Black, any final tips, something to share with our community centre listeners?
I think don't look at, you know, this big conundrum. You don't know what to do. Take something, pick your low pieces of fruit and share what you're doing, because you can't just bury your head in the sand anymore. The government has very strict guidelines on things, and also, you know, you've got a board that you need to answer to. So make sure you start to pick at what you've got to do piece by piece, and you'll get there. And look for outside organisations to support you too.
I think that's a wonderful suggestion. Jessica, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, absolutely. I might just comment on the organisation that Julie and I are working within called Not For Profit Success. It's in its 10th year. And this organization focuses exclusively on providing professional support and consultation services to small and medium not-for-profits. So most of our clients employ around 20 employees, and it's set up to be affordable and thought-leading. So when you're feeling, you know, you're struggling, know that you're not alone. There's someone you can reach out to.
Well, Julie and Jessica, you've certainly demonstrated that learning and sharing today, and I really appreciate you both being a guest on Community Conversations.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening and engaging with our Community Conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide, across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au. And feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next Community Conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.